Erica Tinquist, my Ona Nilsson's recording, and the date today is the 28th of January 2021.
First of all, I wanted to talk about Ruatanaba Street, which was quite an important street. Being the most, it had a number of houses, and there were shops, and there was two doctors lived in Ruatanaba Street, and there was the police station and the police residence, and there was also the chambers of the local barrister and solicitor. His name was Cyril Harker, and he was a rather dapper little man. He later became a local MP. I don't remember the name of the girl in my class that I was told to keep away from. She was very much the youngest of, grown-up siblings. And she seemed an innocuous and quite nice little girl. But anyway, it must have been about 50 years later in the 1990s, I solved the mystery of why I was told to keep away from her. It was a book written by Dr. Mercer, who was the Wellington pathologist. It was a couple of chapters about the local doctor and Cyril Harker and his defence of a couple of people. I don't actually remember all the stories, but if anybody wants to read about it, what happened in the early 40s, I would suggest that they could get that book. You can get books if you try. Yeah, it could be in the National Library or something like
that. And had her father done something?
No, it wasn't her father, it was her brother. Her brother had killed somebody. And this was the story of what had happened to him and why he was in jail. In fact, he wasn't entirely to blame. The doctors themselves were partly to blame. It was over an abortion. But the family was sort of all tied up because later it had one of her nieces who was older than she was in my class at secondary school. So it was very much sort of stuff.
It reverberates on everybody.
Yes, then. Unfortunately. But you know, to find out the mystery 50 years later is a bit hard. But anyway, Ruatanaba Street was also important in that it had the stock routes. There was a stock route to the south which went along the riverbed and out to Tamamu and past the town. And there was another stock route which went up to the west, sort of up to the hills of Waipawa and round and past the Abbotsford Children's Home and eventually came out on the main road to the north of Waipawa. But the stock was moved in those days. It wasn't taken until when we were at primary school. It must have been 1941. One of these steers came rushing up the road past the school and into the school grounds and ran round, and we quickly closed all the doors and windows and whatnot until one of the stockmen came and got the steer back into the mob again. But you had things like that happen.
What school was that?
That was the primary school. The primary school and the secondary school were on two different sections. Primary school was over the railway line and down on the flat, but the secondary school was still up in Waverley Street, on the corner of Waverley Street and Kenilworth Street.
And how old would you be?
I was in Form 2, so yes. I would have been about 11 or 12,
yes.
About 12 when that happened. Talking about rationing, rationing came in fairly early and lasted until after the war. And we had, I can't quite remember, but we certainly had clothing rationing.
Yes, you had clothing coupons.
Yeah, we had clothing coupons and you used those every so often.
Did your mother make you clothes too?
Yeah, yes, she had to. She was a good knitter. And so everything with wool was, knitted up, and then as it wore out and got a bit shabby, she'd unpick it and knit something else. Garment gradually got smaller. She did that.
Do you remember if there was clothing rations for men as well?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, there was, because, of course, active and, you know, to make do in me and patching. And I can remember before high school we had a class each week, yes, which we were taught to darn. I mean, nobody darns socks, but those days, you know, they don't darn down socks these days because it's pretty uncomfortable on the heel. Those were darned. And the other thing I do remember as I got old was the silk stockings. They were silk stockings before the war, brought in Lyle, which was pretty horrible, and we wore in the winter. I remember the woolen stockings made back of my knees itchy and sore. They were horrible. But yes, we treasured those silk stockings. They were only for the best. And if they got a ladder on you, darned it all up.
No. Are we talking about ones that had back seam?
Oh, no, they had a back seam because mine were pre-war. My mother had ordered them and they were pre-war. Yes. But then they did make stockings with no seams, and you had to go and draw the line and make sure you didn't get it crooked. And with the ones with seams, you had to make sure the seams weren't crooked too. So I do remember the rationing and all the work and whatnot.
Did you have a car by then?
No, my parents never ever owned a car, strangely enough, but they never ever did. I got here, the Governor General in his visit in 1943 and 1942. All street lights went out, you know, there was no street lights on. And I can't quite remember what happened, but I have a feeling the Japanese got to come to New Zealand, and I remember they said that you had to have blackout curtains and whatnot. And I remember my mother making them and getting upset because the warden said that they weren't sufficiently blacked out round the edges, and you could see light round the edges. And mother had to do something about it. But that threat must have disappeared again about 1943, because we got a new Governor-General, and his name was Sir Cyril Newell, and he was always a very posh English man.
And did he come to your town?
Yes, he came to Waipa when he arrived, and it must have been about July 1943. At that stage, I was in the fourth form of high school, and so all high school pupils were given the morning off to see him and listen to his welcome and whatnot. And being young and hearty, we were sent on the same side of the road as the Governor General and the welcoming party at the front of the post office, which was on the railway side of the road. The locals were a bit more canny. They got over on the other side of the road and under the verandas and were sheltered. So anyway, they closed off High Street and had a row of chairs across High Street. The dais was a two-tiered affair, complete with flag, and anyway, they went ahead with me and Mr. Eagle and Mr. Harker, the MP, and other dignitaries and whatnot. Mr. Harker turned up, I remember, in black pinstripe trousers and black jacket and ball, just like an English businessman. Anyway, he put the bowler hat underneath the seat while I had the...
Would you sing God Defend New Zealand?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll come to that shortly.
No, sorry.
Yes, anyway, he inspected the guard, inspected the Red Cross and the Boy Scouts and things like that. And then he returned to the dais, but then the bowler hat decided to take off of the window that was spinning off down. I stretched one of the Boy Scouts' hat to go and rescue it, rush after it and rescue it. Anyway, they had all the speeches and whatnot, and at the finish they played the national anthem. Wasn't God Defend New Zealand, it was, you know, God Save the King. Queen. Anyway, they started to play that, and he stood up and took the salute, and the flag came round in the wind and caught him and off him off his feet. Yeah.
Did he give you a holiday from school?
Yes, we got that in the afternoon. We went down to the primary school grounds in the afternoon, and he gave us a day off. Years later, and then I told him my power it was immoral. My father came home very embarrassed because the Governor General was having a holiday out of Wairoa and was a sort of camping fishing affair. And of course, it was very hard to get telephones in those days, so a couple of the local people that had party lines were able to, you know, use his phone line. Anyway, my father wanted to get in touch with the Governor General. It was an important message coming through. And there was a lot of chatter on the line. So he said, you, so-and-so, you know, quite...
And it was the Governor General?
Yeah, it was the Governor General. Oh, Governor General here. So yeah, it was very embarrassing. Called him a few nasty names.
What year would that have been?
Oh, that should have been about 45, I think. It was still war times, that must have been 45. Talking about the Patriotic Society, I can't remember quite what it was called now, but it was run by the patron, which was a former Governor General's wife. I can't remember quite who she was, but it was an English lady because they were still... Oh, I think General Freyberg was actually born in England. He'd been in New Zealand for a long time, so you sort of could regard him as more or less a New Zealander. Yes. But it was, well, I suppose about 10 years before we actually got somebody as a Governor General was actually a New Zealander. I think the first one was a doctor. I'm not sure. It might not have been, but anyway, getting back, the Patriotic Society, well, I worked to look after the troops overseas, and they sent parcels overseas of cakes and Anzac biscuits and cigarettes and goodness knows what, and sent parcels over to the troops overseas. They sent the knitting as well. And they knitted, women knitted jerseys, or pullovers, I should say, because I think some of them wear sleeveless, and gloves, and hats, gloves on four needles, and socks, and hats, and things like that, both for the Air Force and for the Army. And I remember that when I was big enough, oh, I had to go out and do the messages first when I came home from school. Then I had to do my homework, and by that time it was tea time. Then we had to wash up the dishes, and then it was time to sit down and knit. And I had to knit scarves. And it was rather funny because my son asked me a couple of years ago to knit him a scarf for the winter. Guess what the pattern was? It was a basket weave pattern because it was the same both sides. You didn't have to turn it over. No. So he was quite thrilled with it, actually. Well, it was a pretty old pattern to be doing it with. And also in the summertime, because Central Hawke's Bay was very, very dry, like it is at the moment, and because there were still coal-fired engines, they used to set fire to the grass, and I think they also always had to carry water with them to put out the fires in case they caused fires. So they had to be very, very careful. Yeah, the scrub fires.
So most of the time you were living in towns, weren't you?
Yeah, but, when you think about the rationing, the people that lived in small towns and country and things like that, the rationing wasn't terribly bad because, as you say, you could barter your way around and people would make cream and people would make something else and they'd exchange it with you. And so I don't think we were terribly badly off. I think it might have been the people in big towns that suffered more. As I say, if you really wanted petrol, there were others that had a bit extra at some stage. So it was a matter of working out with other people. And I don't think it was all that bad.
Would you still buy ice cream?
Yes, but not all the year round. It only came out in the summer. And the only ice creams you could buy were the ones in the cones, no, it came in the big box and by spring, I think they still do. So well, I think there might have been a couple of flavours, orange or vanilla, but nothing like the flavours we had. But yes, I can't remember quite how much they were. But I do remember that she could buy a pie for 6 months. I'd come home sometimes and I'd fancy a pie, so I'd trot along to the baker's and get myself a pie. It's only about 3 doors along the road, so it was very handy.
And if you'd lost a tooth, did you get a penny or a threepenny bit for your tooth?
Yeah. Oh, probably once the depression was over. I don't think he did during the Depression. Too little money around. I've been a real nomad in my life. I'd like to talk about school certificate, when it was introduced and what it was originally like, because there's been some arguments about it. Some people said it started in 1946. I disagree. Of course, we have it. 1944 was when we started off with school certificate, but I'll explain. It's not entirely inaccurate because it was done in pieces, and 46 was when everything was in place.
So they brought it in gradually?
Yes, it was brought in over 2 years. 46 was when it was finally all in place. It was quite a few subjects. We had to sit five. There were five subjects. You had to sit English, you had to sit arithmetic, and you didn't have to pass in the arithmetic, but you needed to sit at least 3 other subjects. You had to do 5 to pass, but most of us sat 6 because, you know, if you failed one, you still got the exam. I remember that in the case of my mother and father, they, you know, had examinations when they got to Standard 6, had the proficiency and the competency exams. Well, children that passed those exams in Standard 6 could go on to secondary school, but in actual fact, very few of them did, unless they had scholarships for the labouring class or that they, you know, had plenty of money. So it seemed to be only the moneyed people that went on to do secondary education and then occasionally university work. That remained until sometime in the 30s, because I knew my husband sat proficiency, and he was born in 1922. His sister, who was born 18 months later, didn't have to sit it, so it must have been abolished sometime in the late 1930s. But it still remained 4 years secondary education and applying for matriculation. There wasn't much in the way of education in district high schools. Well, it was during the war and there was only one course which was suitable for academic children, but not very good for those that weren't academically inclined. Also, you know, a lot of children simply did not want to stay for 4 years to get the...
Which area were they at school?
My father came from Central Otago and he got competency. My mother was brighter than Dad and she got it in Amberley in North Canterbury. And they used to have the inspectors come round and it was a big performance, apparently. Mm. The inspectors used to visit the school and check on all the children and whatnot. My father came from a sort of rather working class lot of people out of Cromwell. But I know he went to school with one very bright boy who got a scholarship and later went to university and became a school inspector. When I was young, he actually visited my father, who was by then a postmaster, and they had a good old chat.
Was that up here in
Hawke's
Bay?
That was when we were in the Manawatu.
Before you went to Wairoa?
Oh, yes, I went to Wairoa after Waipawa. There was nothing very much done about it except the abolition of the proficiency until 1944, which time they introduced school certificate. And I shifted to Warra in May 44, and the district high school I went to there, they were all the third years sitting school certificate. And as I was a third year, I obviously sat it at the end of 1944. But my friends in Waipawa, the teachers there were much more conservative, and they let the pupils in the third year sit the public service exams, or if they were very, very bright, could sit in their second year. And Form 4, one or two of the very bright ones sat then. But anyway, in 1944, they introduced school certificate. Now, it was in the third year, and it consisted of five subjects that you had to pass. It was compulsory to sit English and arithmetic. But you didn't have to pass arithmetic, but you did have to pass English. If you didn't pass English and you passed everything else, you still failed. So most of us make sure that it was very important to get English. But we also, most of us, sat six subjects just in case we failed one and we still had one up our sleeves. The pass mark was 30, but it was a very strict 30. And for those people who sat in their fourth year and had an average of 50 instead of 30, they were granted matriculation. So that was the situation. Sit in the third year, pass five subjects with an average of 30, with English compulsory to pass. If you didn't do that, you didn't pass. However, a lot of people were a bit jealous about it because some of us had got an average of 50, yes, and we felt we were being a bit short-changed. However, in 1945, university entrance was introduced, and we had to sit in 4 years, but we had to sit three subjects only. Well, in 1945 was sort of very unfair because children who went to large high schools, proper high schools, not district high schools, if the teacher thought you were worthy, you were automatically passed. You didn't have to sit in exams. Those who were a bit dodgy, weren't quite sure whether they would pass or not, the children had to sit the exam. And for all children, irrespective of how bright they were, all children who came from district high schools had to sit. So in some cases you didn't have to sit, in other cases you had to sit. Again, that seems very unfair. I didn't sit, I was granted mine because by that stage I'd gone to Napier, to the girls' high school. But a lot of my friends, now some of my friends in my class had to sit. They all passed, but it seemed very unfair the way it was done. Anyway, that was the exam. And after that, from 46 onwards, it was three subjects for university entrance and five for the school certificate. Later, over the years, it was altered. The pass mark was 50 and the marking wasn't quite so severe. And they made it four subjects to pass with for school certificate, although I'm not very sure whether English had to be passed or not.
When I was there in 55, yes, it still had to be.
Was it 4 years then?
Four subjects.
Oh, well, I brought it down from five to four. And they had put the university entrance up to four. And then, of course, they made more allowance for the sixth form because very few people ever got to the sixth form. It was 4 years and second year fifths, and that was quite enough.
And this is 1946?
No, it was 44 was the introduction of the school certificate. 1945 was the introduction of university entrance as well as school certificate. And 1946 was, well, you know, both.
When did you go to training college?
Oh, I didn't go to training college until 1969. I was 40. But it meant that there were friends of mine, same age as me, that passed in the third year. Others, because the school was conservative, didn't pass until the fourth year. And I couldn't go to teachers' college till a year, supposedly, after if I'd gone to teachers' college, supposedly after me. But some years ago, there was an argument in the paper, the Herald, about it. And somebody stopped the argument, said there was no further argument because it was introduced in 1946. Well, that jolly well isn't true. In fact, I think David Moe's thrown it out. But I actually had my school certificate paper from 1944. I thought I would conclude the 3.5 years that we had in Waipawa during the war. And I thought I would mention a couple of things. One, that the trains were unreliable. There was a bus to the district high school from Otani and round the back of Otani in the country. And there was the mail car that took the mail and groceries and things out to Tikikino. And I think there might have been a bus to Ongaronga. There was a train, but it was very unreliable. It was a goods train with a carriage on the back, and it did a lot of shunting. And sometimes it would be on time at 9 o'clock, but sometimes it would be 10 or quarter to 10 and things like that. There was also the goods train that went home, and some of them didn't get home till about 5 o'clock. But the head of the secondary department, Mary MacDonald, she got in touch with the railways, and there was a train that came through at about 3:45, but it didn't stop at Pukehau. But she got it so that that made us stop at Pukehau to let the peoples off, and it was only in turn time. Well, anyway, this particular time, it must have been the end of 1943, the train was late, so the boys were wondering what they should be doing, and it was getting their Guy Fawkes Day. So they decided that they would make gunpowder. Of course, there was one cowbell there used by the station people. Anyway, they used that to make the gunpowder, and of course the gunpowder exploded, and one of the boys ended up in the Waipa Corral Hospital. Was there for several days. He got quite badly burnt around his face. And another boy, whose father was the farm manager of Te Ate College, he lost the seat of his pants. They were blown off, so of course he had to go home to change his pants, and he missed the train, but I do remember that.
How many boys were there catching it?
Oh, well, there were about 6 or 7, I suppose. There was quite a few, at least 3 or 4 boys, and I can think of a couple of girls. Yes, it was quite a few, but they had no way of getting to school except on this wretched goods train, which sort of shunted all the way through. Sometimes it had a lot to shunt off, other times it didn't have much. They set timetable. I might mention Waipawa. The cemetery is on the road out to Tikikino. It's just off the main road. It is on Cemetery Road, no exit.
And then after that you moved?
Yes, in May 1944 we moved to Wairau. Of course I'd made good friends and whatnot in my partner, so I wasn't very happy about shifting to Wairoa. We went up on the train that went through, you know, Waipawa about 3:45 and went all the way up to Gisborne. And I remember having a good weep on the way up. And I never really made any good friends in Wairoa.
Would you be going to the Wairoa College?
No, it wasn't a college, it was a district high school in those days. It is a college now, because there's no district high schools. Yes. And Waipawa District High School, they did rebuild it where the primary school was, down over the railway in the flats there. But that was closed and they opened Central Hawke's Bay College at Wub Grau. So the district high school's closed. But anyway, we went up to Wairoa in May.
And were you living in a railway house?
No, it wasn't a railway house, it was a post office house. And it was a very luxurious house compared with what we'd had in Waipawa. And the one they built, which we never actually moved into, we were going to, but then they got a shift. The next postmaster went into it. But it was a very luxurious house and had 3 bedrooms, built-in wardrobes, and had a small kitchen, but it had a big deal with a hatch through a large dining room with bay windows and, you know,
that sounds much better.
Yes, it was. And it had a open fireplace and we used that as our main living room. We did have a lounge as well, but we didn't use it very much. It was at the back of the house and then we had the 3 very nicely built-in wardrobes in the house. And
was the toilet and the bathroom in the house?
The bathroom was, but the toilet wasn't. We didn't have water closets in those days. It was still the long drop, and that was out in the garage outside. And I remember eating too many grapes one time and getting diarrhea in the morning and being interrupted by the night man coming to empty it. But there was provision for it. On the back there was a closed sort of back porch thing. Mm. Wash house, laundry opened off it. That had lots of cupboards in it. And we had this enclosed porch at the back. And the toilet was off the porch. Well, provision for the toilet. My mother used it for brooms and things. And also had a wood box built in the back inside so that we didn't have to get wet to get wood. Also had a clothes rack, which you could, you know, lower on, put up high. So it was a very luxurious house. And when we went there in May, the previous postmaster had been a keen collector of chrysanthemums. He was a chrysanthemum fancier, and when we arrived in May, of course, all the chrysanthemums were out. My mother was quite thrilled. So she had a lot of fun there. And I remember her growing salvia bonfire. She grew the salvia bonfires and they were supposed to be miniature ones, but I think she put horse manure with it. And the things grew and grew and grew, and I was about 15 when we went there and they were right up to my shoulder. The really good show. And my mother also liked having garden fires and whatnot. Yes. She wasn't popular with the neighbours because she'd have them about 9 o'clock when everybody put their washing out and they were covered in smoke. She'd done her washing at 4 o'clock and have it all in. I remember the policeman coming along one day. We weren't supposed to have fires at all. And he said, "Oh, I hear your bonfires are very good this year," to my mother, and she wasn't quite sure whether he meant that on the flowers.
So what did your father do when he wasn't in the post office? Did he play any sport?
He used to go out fishing sometimes, and he liked shooting rabbits and things like that. He came from Central Otago, where they had a lot of rabbit shooting and things like that, and people let him go out. By the time he'd done the lawns and whatnot, he didn't really have that much time, because postmasters were on call 24 hours a day.
And did he do JP work?
I don't know. He did sit there, and Shannon, he did marriage and things like that.
Right.
He could marry people. Because he got into trouble one time because he married somebody that was underage. She said she was, I think you had to be 21 to get your parents' consent, and she didn't have her parents' consent. So she put her age up and they got married, and the parents were so annoyed that they took it to court. So my father got into a bit of trouble over that one. But he had a very busy time because there was a shortage of staff, and you're on call 24 hours a day, more or less. And the stamps got stuck or something else went wrong. And I remember on one occasion, and I think I might have mentioned it before, but out of Iowa, the Governor-General went camping. He went on a fishing expedition and went camping, and of course there was a shortage of telephones. Of course they were all manual in those days, and there was somebody talking away on the telephone and making a bit of a noise, and my father complained and told them to get off the line that the Governor-General was wanting to use it. Oh, this is the Governor-General here.
He was already talking.
Yeah. The Wairoa District High School, I went there in May, and that, of course, was 1944 and was the year that school certificate first came in. Well, now, my pa, they were very conservative and weren't going to let you sit school certificate until fourth year, 1945. But when I went to Wairoa, yes, they were all going to sit in 3 years. Which made things a bit difficult for me because I only had two terms to catch up and be able to sit. And so I sort of had to work fairly hard. And I do remember I'd been studying and I decided I would go out to the river heads. Now it was, you know, Shingle River and whatnot, and sometimes the bar would go right over, and this was the time when the bar was right over, but the river was backing up well. So anyway, I thought I would walk over to the other side of the river, going over the shingle, and so I went over there and wandered around a bit, and then I thought I'd better get home, which was just as well, because the river was just level at the top of the bar, and it was just sort of starting to splash over. So anyway, I got back and got on my bike, and I thought I'd biked 100 yards, and there was a big roar, and the bar went and washed everything out, and there was a big...
You were lucky.
Yes, I was very, very lucky. Yeah.
It still does that. You know, the build-up comes and then it goes so far, and then all of a sudden...
Yes, there's enough pressure to wash it out. So I was very, very lucky. I never told my mother.
Did you have many people in this college?
I suppose we had about three or four classes. I have got pictures, actually, of it still somewhere. I don't know what David's done with them. I gave pictures of that high school to the Wairoa Museum with names, which they were quite grateful to have. Names on the back and the prefects and whatnot. So that was interesting.
Did you have school socials or anything like that?
Oh, yes, we used to have a social once, you know, towards the end of the year things like that. But, you know, it was wartime and there weren't very many sort of socials. Right. I didn't have that much. Yeah.
Where would you do most of your shopping? Wairoa or Napier or Gisborne?
Yes, that was something I was going to mention. We had the rail cars, and I don't know whether there were more, but one at least was based in Wairoa, and it used to leave about 5:45 in the morning, and it would go down to Napier, get there somewhere after 8, And then it would turn around about 9 o'clock and go back through Wairoa up to Gisborne and get to Gisborne about 1. And then it would turn around at about 5 o'clock and go back to Wairoa and get there about 7. So the tendency was more to go to Gisborne if you were going shopping, because 1 to 5 was, you know, much better hours. Time. But it was very embarrassing going to Gisborne with my mother, because she would go through the parks and she would be surreptitiously nipping all sorts of plants and whatnot, and cuttings and so forth.
So they still wouldn't have had a car?
No, no, they didn't have a car. They never, ever had a car. They died in 1970, 71, my mother died. My father died beginning of 74, and they never, ever had a car. But it was very pleasant in Wairoa, but I never really... Well, I was only there the 1 year. I went to Wallaceville in 1946, so I went back to Wairoa.
How did you come to get a job there at Wairoa in 1946?
Because we had the people come round and sort of talk about them and advertise for them, and I had been interested in science, and by power we had a very good science teacher. She was extremely good, but I didn't get a very good, well, in fact, I didn't get one at all in Wairoa. There was one man was sort of told to try and teach science, but science wasn't his subject. And I remember we made something or other. It had sulfuric acid, and the sulfuric acid boiled over and caught me on the face right down here. Yes. Of course, these days you'd been carted off to the doctor and goodness knows what. But in those days, I think I actually took me to the chemist, but that was about it. Fortunately, I had my glasses on, so that protected me from getting a tattoo in the eye. But it was black right around my face. So my mother decided that I would go to Napier Girls High School because she thought I would get science there. But unfortunately, I didn't. They only did home science, which was cooking and things like that. And so it was really a wasted year. But however, I went down to Wallaceville Research Station.
Did you live out on the station or did you board somewhere?
No, I boarded in. Well, first of all, I started off down at Woburn in the girls' hostel there. But it was hard work getting from, you had to get from there into Petone and then from Petone up to Upper Hutt. So I was only there a few weeks and then I got bored. And I got my bicycle and I never looked back.
Does Wairoa have a district council or county council?
Oh, we had the mayor. We had the mayor and we had the town council. And then there would be the county council.
Were they growing all the fruit trees? Fraser Town's got all that sort of thing out there.
Not at that stage, no. No, I mean, what fruit you grew your own. Mostly peaches and nectarines and things like that. Oh, yes, I must mention that, of course, we had this very flash house in Wairoa. But I remember on one occasion my mother had been baking, it was hot, and so she'd put the cake up on the windowsill to cool. And then the neighbour's cat came in and was busy eating the cake.
Did you have children your age there that you could play with?
No, they're mostly younger.
Because the 20-year-olds would have been at war.
Well, they had some of the older people going to war by then. That had been called up, conscripted.
Did you go out to Tuai at all, or Lake Waikaremoana?
Yes, well, that was when we had the E-Day. You know, that was in May 1945, and I was home with my parents. And we did take the bus out of Wairoa to Tuai and spent the E-Day there because Dad had a friend who'd known in Shannon and was in the electricity department. They had Tuai as a station. Yes, so we went out there and I did have a photo. I don't know whether it's still there or not. Yes, we went out to Tuai for VE Day and we went to see this man, I can't think of his name now, there, and we were all photographed out there and we had quite a day.
You went by bus?
Yeah.
And came home on a bus. Of course, I went to Napier Girls High School in 1945. Which was a waste of time because I didn't get my science anyway. And I did have considerable difficulty settling down because I'd gone from being a person in a small community to a little girl at a very large school. And it took a while to get used to it, going away from home and boarding and whatnot. But I did sufficiently well to be able to get my university entrance. Had that granted to me, my having to sit. But I do remember the J-Day because it came about 3 days before the end of the school term. I think it was a Wednesday, and of course they announced VJ-Day, and everybody gave up, and we all decided that we would go home. Yeah. And the school gave up, and we all went home. But instead of my going home, I decided to stay on for a night because I wanted to have a look at the Norfolk Pines all lit up because they put all the coloured lights on them and they hadn't been on during the war. But anyway, I went down to have a look at them, but of course it rained like mad. So I stayed the night and I went home the following morning on the rail car, and did I get into trouble? My mother thought I should have gone home the night before. My father had gone over to the railway station and waited for me, and there was a real row about it. I'll never forget that. But of course they didn't have nearly as many Norfolk Pines as they've got now, and I think that probably the lights were a lot better. But there was an article some years ago from a German submarine captain, and he reckoned the place was lit up, but it wasn't. There were no lights, no street lights on at all, so that wasn't accurate. Napier is the only place I've ever really got lost in, because I came home with somebody and they were a bit lazy and they said, oh, I could walk home myself. You know, up on Nature Hill. And I got lost and I went down the wrong lot of steps in the dark, and I ended up down in Harding Road instead of up in Shakespeare Road. And I sort of never forgot that. Well, there's sort of steps here and steps there, and if you don't watch, you end up in the wrong place. But it was quite scary wondering where on earth you were in the dark. That's where I recognised down the bottom of Harding Road, unfortunately.
So can we go back to Wairoa about your in-laws? He was helping with the bridge.
Oh, just a little bit about my father-in-law. His parents actually went from living in Ekatahuna to going to Wairoa to live.
What was their name?
Nelson. So they went to Wairoa to live. I think two of the brothers, because my father-in-law had cousins and whatnot in Wairoa. And we found last year when we went to Wairoa, David and I went to Wairoa and went to the museum, that my father-in-law and his brothers all went to the First World War from Wairoa. And they've got, you know, one of these interactive displays, and was showing him and so forth. Well, anyway, I've got a photograph of them taken in 1916 with my mother-in-law, taken on Napier, early in 1916. So we sent the photograph up, you know, took a copy of it and sent the photograph up for them. So they can put them there. Wasn't very good because it was behind glass, but it was nice to have an actual photograph of him during the war. Anyway, to go on with my father-in-law, after the war he went to walk with, but there was a depression and he and a lot of other farmers had to walk off. So he went down. He had several relatives of his own, and my mother-in-law had a couple of sisters and a brother in Wairoa, and they helped out. So they went down to Wairoa to live in 1927 or 28. And that was the first job that my father-in-law had, was working on the railway bridge, putting in the caissons. He used to go along every day and dig away. It was all done by hand. And eventually the caissons would go down a bit further and a bit further.
So the caissons had to be cut or drilled down?
Yeah, sort of big holes were dug and then the caisson would go down a bit further and so forth. I put the bars in, but that was really rather heavy work for my father-in-law, and so he got a job with the Wairoa electricity people. And they used to do the minor repairs of toasters and things. They couldn't have been too fussy in those days. And used to look after the showroom and things like that and deal with accounts and that sort of thing. So he did that for, I think, about 3 or 4 years. And then, of course, the depression really bit. And they closed the showroom, so he lost his job. However, he was very lucky, well, in some ways, in that his in-laws had died. Well, one died right about 1932, or 33, I think.
What was their name, do you know?
Coe, and they were in Waipawa. He was a saddler in Waipawa, and his wife had come out from County Cork in Ireland, so they settled down there. But they both died, just had their 50th wedding anniversary, and they both died within about 3 months of each other. So there was £50, which my mother-in-law got, and they were able to buy a farm in Dannevig.
£50?
£50, so they bought a farm in Dannevig.
To buy a farm at that time would be marvellous.
Yeah, and they were able to add to the farm as time went on.
Was it dairying?
Dairying. And, of course, the boys were all getting bigger and growing up, and they were also very useful on the farm. So they used to do all the milking and whatnot for my father-in-law and do all the work on the farm. Of course, in those days, labour was cheap, but materials were expensive, other way round now. So they used to run the farm. In fact, my father-in-law took ill shortly after they bought the farm, and the boys actually ran the farm. My oldest brother-in-law left his job. He had been working for somebody down near Featherston, and that way somewhere, and came back and sort of took over the farm, and he and the boys ran it. But what happened eventually was in 1944, the war was not going terribly well. Well, one of my brothers-in-law, when he left school, he had gone on the farm to help his farm. The others had done other things. My eldest brother-in-law was in Dannevig, was a truck driver, and Arthur, well, he was in the Air Force at that stage, and Des was in the Air Force, and he'd been shot down and was a prisoner of war. So it didn't look like the war was going to end in a hurry. And well, at the beginning of 1944, things were looking down, but then they had the invasion of Europe in about June or July, and after that, of course, things went from strength to strength. But anyway, my father-in-law decided that he couldn't keep on. He tried to run the farm himself, and he couldn't keep on, so he sold it. And they went and lived to Dannevig for a while before they eventually went up to Kawakawa, and he bought a business and went up there.
So you and Arthur, when you were married, where did you live first?
We got married on May 1st, 1950. I was at that stage working for the Department of Agriculture, but I was in head office doing office work. Arthur was running the dairy produce grader's office on the waterfront, and we lived at Pinehaven. Anyway, just before Raymond was born, which was about, he's about 11 months younger than when we got married, in February we got a, what do they call it, the emergency housing, you know, what do they call it, Trentham military camp. So we went in there, we had 3 winters in there before we got a state house.
Things would be very tight at that stage.
Oh yes, yes, there was no...
You'd wish you were back out on the farms.
No, Arthur didn't like farming much. He liked the country, but he didn't like the farms. At least when we were in the country, he knew how the farms ran, which was, you know, the country people knew that he was a farmer and knew what was going on, so they tended to accept him more than having a townie. I should explain that I was born in Pātia. My maiden name was Sample, and my father came from near Cromwell, from Nobin Ferry, central Otago, and my mother came from Amberley in North Canterbury. But when they married in 1923, they went to live in Pātia, where my father was the telegraphist at the post office. In other words, he sent all the telegrams and recorded all the telegrams that came in and sent the ones out. But in 1931, he got his first postmaster's position. And when I was two, I believe on my second birthday, we moved to Shannon in southern Manawatu. And that's the longest I lived anywhere, because I lived there for 9.5 years. And then in November 1940, because the war started in September 1939, we moved to Waipawa, and I've told you something of my life there. And we were there for 3.5 years. Then we went to Wairoa, and I had two terms at the Wairoa District High School. And then in 1945, I spent a year, or a wasted year, at Napier Girls High School. I went back home in 1946 for about 6 months. And then I went to Wallaceville Animal Research Station. I worked there in Upper Hutt. And I was there till about the end of 1949, beginning of 1950. I did a bit of clerical work there at head office for about 6 months. I married in 1st of May 1950 at Kawakawa, and then I got pregnant about the end of the year 1950. I stopped working. Then in February 1951, we got a unit in the Trenton Transit Camp, the army. That was a bit grim, because they were just a 40-man army huts divided up with dividing walls. They had no ceilings in them, just sacked ceilings, and when it was cold in the winter, they dripped on.
Oh,
it was really cold. We had no hot water. We had to heat all the hot water, and we had coal ranges. They didn't heat anything, just that you cooked on it. Well, then we fed 3 winters in the transit camp, and then we got a state house at Taita, and then September 1953, and we moved down there in Taita and Lower Hutt. And in 1954, my husband decided that he wanted to. He was working for the agriculture department as a clerk, and he decided he wanted to go teaching. So he did the pressure cooker course, 1 year pressure cooker course in 1954 and 55, and started teaching at the end of 55, then turned 55. So we were in Taita, I think, for about 5 years. And in 1958, we decided we would go to Auckland, because Arthur's parents were living in Whangarei, and his mother's health was declining. So we paid our own expenses and went up to Papatoa. We were there for 4 years, and at that stage, in 1962, Arthur got his first head teacher's job at a place called Waimamaku in the Hokianga. It's just north of the Kauri Forest, south of Opononi, and we went there, and we had 2 years of the term in there.
How many children did you have now?
The fourth one
David was born when we were at Rhymer Mather. I better not tell you about that, but he was born in the beginning of January, and I remember Arthur was over painting his father's house at Whangarei, and they were not getting on, and I got in the middle of the sort of the arguments. They're both complaining to me. So I got high blood pressure, so I ended up in hospital for about a week. I get away from them so I could have a bit of a rest. But anyway, we stayed there for 2 years in a term, and then Arthur got a job as a senior teacher of junior classes, and he was one of the first men to get this job. People weren't very happy about it. They thought it was a lady's job, and there was a bit of opposition to it. We had a house in Papatai. We bought the state house and we had it let out, but we couldn't get a house into a car. So we had to go over the river and go to a place called Angbarro. And we spent a couple of years there, up in the hills over the other side of the Waikato River. And then we spent 1967 in a long-term relieving job for a principal who'd gone to England at Arapahoe, which was about 6 kilometres or so south of Dargaville, just off the main road. Then we went back to Tuakau, and we were able to rent a house in Tuakau. Again, we sold the one in Papatoa and bought the one we were in for $6,500. We paid cash for it. And we were there for 9 years, 1967 to 1976. And at that stage, Arthur was still at Tuakau at the job. The older children had gone to Pukekohe High School, but they'd opened a new high school at Form 1 to 6 school at Tuakau, and it wasn't a particularly good school. David was just wasting his time and not doing well, so he decided, we liked the principal, but we decided that we'd go to Pukekohe and buy a house over there so that he could go to a proper school. So we did that, and we were there till about 1980. Both of us took a job. I'd been to Teachers College in 1969 to 71.
Did you do it by correspondence?
No, I went to Ardmore Teachers College. I used to have to drive up and whatnot. Anyway, yes, we went to Horowika, which was out of Dannevirke, halfway between Dannevirke and the coast, and just a couple of miles over the border. We were in some problems.
What year was that?
1980. Anyway, Arthur had gallbladder troubles, and he ended up in hospital. He was very ill for 6 weeks and whatnot, so he continued till the end of the year. But, no, it must have been 1981, that's right. We went there in third term, 1980, and we had 1981 there, but he was very ill. So he continued till the end of 1981, but he decided that it was too much. So he had 2 terms on leave, and he turned 60 in 1982 when he could retire. I think they paid him right up just about until his retirement, August, and he retired in October. So we went on until the end of 81, and then we went back to, well, more or less back to Auckland, where he had a job at Waiuk. That was Pukekohe, and that was supposed to be in for 3 years, but then the job disappeared because the men that were building a new steel mill, they thought they would come up to Waiuk and the school roll would go up, but instead they decided to stay down in the Waikato at Huntley and be bussed up to Waiuk. So the population didn't count, so I lost my job at the end of 1981. But then I spent 1982 and 1983 as principal of a two-teacher school at Mufonga School, which was on the Napier Taihape Road, the Taihape end, and I was there for 2 years. Then I went back to Pakuranga in Auckland in 1980. 6, I decided I'd had enough teaching and I left teaching and went to work for Coach Payton's as a tea lady, filing clerk, knitting expert in Pakeranga.
And was Arthur still with you then?
Yeah, well, he'd retired. He was working as a caretaker for the Pakeranga Heights School, doing a bit of teaching and whatnot as well. And after that, I really don't know quite what happened. We sort of moved around an awful lot. We went to Palmerston North for a while, and we were there about 18 months. And we went to Dannevirke, and we were there about 6 months. Somebody came and offered us a good price for our house, and we went back to Auckland.
So you'd have a house, and you'd sell it?
Yeah.
And then you'd move in?
Yeah, and we moved again.
How did you decide where to move?
Oh, Arthur always wanted to come back to Auckland because it was warmer. And I'm not too sure, you know, in the late 90s, we were in Pukekohe from about 1993 to 1999. And then we saw a brand new townhouse in Dannevirke, very handy. When we went down to his brother's 84th birthday, and we decided to buy it. And we went down there. But then his brother died in 2001, and another brother and sister died in 2002, and we had a very cold winter, and Arthur was ill. So he said to me he didn't want to stay any longer, it was too cold, so he went back to Papadoni in Auckland.
Did you buy another house up there?
Yep, built a unit, which was very handy. So we lived in that from 2003 until I lived there until 2008. Arthur died in 2006. And then I came down to Whanganui from 2008 to 2015, and 2015 to now to Hastings.
Why come to Hastings? Was it because of the warmth?
No, it was because my daughter was, well, I went to Whanganui, my daughter was living in Whanganui, so, you know, she was keeping an eye on me and whatnot. And then they sold their property in Whanganui and Cordell, and they moved over here. So I had to come over here. So that's why I came over here. But then, of course, she died in 2019.
That must have been a dreadful blow to all your family.
Yes, it was.
What was her name?
Marion.
And her married name?
McLaughlin. So that's roughly the story of my life. What we did between 1987 and we went to Palmerston North, we went to Dannevirke.
Did all your furniture have wheels on it?
No.
So where have you been happiest?
Probably in...
You had a happy marriage.
Yeah,
yes.
A reasonably happy marriage.
Yes.
It was a bit difficult. He had Asperger's syndrome. It was often hard to explain what was going on. But we got on well. I think probably round about Pakeranga. Well, today I wanted to talk to you about Hararika. I'm not sure whether you're actually interested or not, because Hararika was just over the border in the Wellington province. But we went there from Auckland, and we also went through to Dannevirke. We used to go to relatives in Dannevirke. Arthur had been on the farm at Ruaroa out of Dannevirke, and when we went to Hararika, which was 44 kilometres east of Dannevirke, halfway between Dannevirke and Akatio, he was quite popular with the locals because he was considered a local himself, having been on the farm at Ruaroa as a child. So the local farmers were very happy to have him there. Not only was he a local, but he was also very handy, and he kept all the school grounds and whatnot, did all the repairs and whatnot, which meant that the school committee didn't have to do it. Now, it was a very windy place. It was always blowing, and in order to protect the house, we had macrocarpus right round the house on three sides of it, and the wind was always blowing and always sort of making a noise.
And I remember one day at lunchtime I came out to do my duty.
Because you were teaching there then?
Yes, we had a two-teacher school. My husband was the principal and I was the teacher to help him. He was due to retire. We came in August 1980 and he was due to retire in 1982. So we thought we would do the 2 years there and then go somewhere else. And I remember on one occasion it was very windy and we had a lot of magpies around in the trees and I watched a magpie flying and it was so windy the magpie was going backwards. So it got itself into another gear and still tried to fly into the wind and it was still going backwards, so it turned round, went off with the wind. And I remember on another occasion, and for once it wasn't blowing, and after it got off to another school. And I remember my class sitting there at lunchtime saying, "Oh, what's happened to the wind?" They were quite upset. They were so used to the wind, they just couldn't get over that it was quiet.
How many in your class at that stage?
I think there was something like over 20. I heard from the new entrance up to Standard 1. It was also on a fault line, and on one occasion we were doing reading. Suddenly I thought I heard somebody running in the classroom, so we got up to admonish the child that was running, and it turned out it was an earthquake, so we all had to get under our desks. Most of the people went to Downeyburg rather than to Pahia Tour.
Was for general shopping or for the school?
Oh, yes, for the school, but actually we were in a rather difficult situation because some children went to the south and they were in the telephone book for Pahia Tour and some of them were in the Downeyburg book. So we had to have both books in the class in order to, you know, be able to contact the parents. And it was quite a nice school. I quite liked it. And I remember we had cows next door to us. Somebody ran Red Devon cattle, but there was a hole in the fence. And the fence went across and they were always getting out and they'd be wandering around the road and wandering into our place if we had the gate open, and think they were quite attractive cattle. And my brother-in-law and sister-in-law who lived in Downeyburg, they used to like coming out to see us because we were about 44 kilometres from Downeyburg and over the Pukatoi Range. So my brother-in-law used to come out and somebody had some belted galloways, so he liked to look at the belted galloways and was really quite intrigued with them.
Were you far away from the school for the schoolhouse?
I could get from the schoolhouse to my class door in 2 minutes flat. And the school was used as a sort of community centre as well. And I often had people come round on the weekends wanting to play tennis on the tennis court and being very surprised to come in and find me working. And we also had the Women's Division of Federated Farmers used to come in once a month and use the classroom. The Anglican Church used to come in. Oh, they came in on the fifth Sunday. If it was the fifth Sunday of the month, and they used it as well. So I used to have to move all the furniture and whatnot so that they could
have their service.
The river that went round three sides of the school ground was right down. It was in quite a narrow chasm. But in the wintertime it used to rain and we had our pump house which brought her up to the school swimming bath. And sometimes it was so buried we used to have to dig it out before we could use it. So we were there, but unfortunately Arthur had, well, he had gallstones and he had a ruptured gallbladder in May of 1980 and he was in hospital for 3 or 4 weeks and then he was home for about 6 weeks. So he did go back teaching afterwards, but I had to take over as principal while he was out the way. I had a local lady that had been a teacher and she came in and helped out, but I had to do all the clerical work. It was a funny place because the power was not very good.
Not reliable.
No, it wasn't reliable. It had been put in by our tour power board. Whereas Stanleybeck had three-phase power, they only had two-phase, and if it went out in the night, you know, either wind or whatnot, or earthquakes, because we had a lot of earthquakes, you could guarantee that you wouldn't have any power till the morning, so we had to have extra things. Fortunately, the school had three rooms. One was my classroom, the older part was Arthur's classroom, and we had a room in the middle which the preschool people used to use about once a week.
What was the name of that school?
It was Hiroika School. As I say, you know, we went to Dannevirke and the local people also went to Dannevirke. Nobody went to Paihia too, but it was strict.
What happened after Arthur was sick?
Well, he did go back until the end of the year. But at the end of the year, he decided that he'd had enough teaching, had a lot of sick leave. Well, he was due to retire anyway. So he retired and, well, they paid him up until August, and then he retired in, I think it was about October 1982. So we were only there about a year, but over a year. And anyway, we used to get on well with the people. And I remember they opened the new freezing racks at Aringi, so a lot of parents took the children to see Robert Muldoon open the freezing racks, and I remember them coming home and saying, oh, he was only a little man. They were quite surprised about it. And I do remember when we moved out and the band came to take our stuff away, it got caught up on the phone lines.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Where did you move to then?
Well, Arthur retired and I moved to Wyork. I was released from my two-year contract because of Arthur's illness, and we went back up to South Auckland, and I went to Wyork.
Oh, so you moved again?
Yeah, yes, it was only for about a year and a half.
When did you come back into the Hawke's Bay area?
Not until, we went to Dannevirke. We bought a house in Dannevirke, and I think we were there for about 18 months, around about 1989, 1990. And then we moved back again for 3 years.
To Auckland?
Oh, yes, we moved up there, a few other places.
Did you keep your house in Dannevirke?
No, we sold that. Somebody came in, we were doing it up, putting in new parts, and we put in a wood shed and things like that, and somebody walked off the road and wanted to buy it. We went back in November 1999, and I think we shifted out again about February 2003.
You went back to Dannevirke and then you left again and then you went back again.
Yeah.
What were you doing, you know, in between? Had you retired as well?
I'd retired as well, and yes, we were right in Dannevirke. We were in one street back from the main street.
You could walk up to town.
We only had to walk. Well, we were right in town.
Did you join the Women's Institute yourself?
No, I thought it might be a bit. They asked me, but you know, by the time I'd taught and got all my things ready and whatnot, I didn't.
What about Arthur? Would he go to the club or go for a walk downtown?
He used to go. My hockey used to go down, and he copied a lot of bits and pieces for the children and colouring in and various things he did for the kids while we were in New York. But we went back in 1999 because Arthur wanted to be with his brother and sister who lived in Dannevirke.
So family sort of brought you back mostly?
Yeah, but then his sister and, let's see who it was, there were two, his elder brother, they both died in February 2002 within 5 days of each other. We had one brother died in 2001, and two of them died in 2002, and then another sister-in-law died in 2003. So I said, it's too cold, and we looked out and saw snow on the Ruahinis and snows on the Puketoys. Yeah. I said, oh, I said, we'll go back to Auckland, it's warmer.
When did you come back down here then?
I didn't come back down here until Arthur died in 2008. He died in 2006. And I spent 2007 in Auckland, and then I came down in 2008 because my daughter was down in Whanganui. So yes. I went down there and went into Somerset there. And then I came from Whanganui to Hastings. So I've sort of gone the circle. Well, I don't think there's much more I can write about that.
Can you mention your son or your sons? You've got one in London.
Yeah, but he didn't go till 2010.
So he was still in New Zealand?
No, he was in Australia. He went to Australia in 1985 and went to Melbourne, and they were in Melbourne. They went to London at the end of 2010.
So you came back for your daughter and then she got ill?
Yeah, well, I came back for her and then they shifted to Hawke's Bay. Yes. I told them that it would be dry, but they wouldn't believe me. So that's how I happened to be in Hastings.
Would you say your life was eventful?
We moved around quite a lot and we had a sort of different... But we were never actually on a farm. Well, Arthur was as a child, but we were sort of in the country and rural and country people, but we weren't actually farming.
And would you do it all again?
Well, I suppose I'd have to.
That's Iona bringing herself and the knowledge bank up to date till 1st of April 2021.